Hey guys, Jose here. Before we start the show, I just had a quick thought, and I wanted to address something that's very, very important and that I never knew was happening to me until I actually dug deep. So have you ever been on track, right? Have you ever been, everything's been going good, life is good, you're not depressed, you're not anxious, you're not distracted, and then life comes out of nowhere and whacks you and completely derails you from that. And then the opposite happens. You immediately become desperate. You become anxious. You don't know what you're going to do next. It's okay. This is not unique. This is something that happens to all of us, including me. And I call it derailment, right? It's this invisible force that we have to fight every single day. And if we don't show up to fight on a given day, it will derail us. It will take us off track. And it will lead us down, you know, a direction that we don't want to go to, guys. So that's exactly what happened to me in 2019 when I first started my business. I had a fantastic year. And then 2020 came and everything went away. So I went in, I analyzed this feeling, I thought about it, I reflected on it, I studied on it, and what came of it was derailment. My very first book, I basically organized the top 10 methods and tools that I use to basically get back on track whenever I feel derailed, whenever I feel that anxiety, whenever I feel like I don't know what to do. And I felt it was very important because I felt everybody should have this at some point in their life, and it's super important. So guys, check out the book, spotlightcoalition.com/derailthebook. You can go get the audiobook, you can go get the ebook, whatever way you like to consume this information. But like a mechanic, you need the right tool for the right job, and this is the right tool to battle against derailment. Enjoy the show, guys. Hey everyone, and thanks for joining me for another great conversation. As always, I appreciate you guys. My next guest is an awesome guest. We share two big things in common, and that's the love of educating and the love of Bitcoin, among other things. We get into it and we talk about so many different things. We talk about real estate. We talk about Pokemon cards, believe it or not. We talk about what's important. We talk about Crohn's disease. So much in this conversation, and I hope you guys enjoy it. I introduce to you guys the incredibly smart and humble Eric Podjoski.
As long as you can see the Bitcoin, B, right?
I can see the Bitcoin for sure.
That's all I need.
All right, cool. So we're rolling. Eric, I do my intros after, so don't even worry about that. How's it going, okay. Brother? So glad we could finally meet, not face-to-face, but the next best thing. And thanks for coming on the podcast, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Super excited to be here. This is awesome.
Cool, man. Before we get into all the great stuff that we're about to get into, because like I just told you, I think everything that you told me here that we must cover, I'm super interested in. Why don't you let my listeners know a little bit about yourself, man? What you got going on?
Sure. Yeah. I just turned 25 years old and right now living in Baltimore, Maryland. Grew up in Pennsylvania my whole life and needed to get away. So I went to college at Penn State University, studied energy engineering there. And then now I am full-time entrepreneur working on a Bitcoin business. So lots have changed in this past year.
That sounds incredible. Now, how does that feel? I mean, this is a direct question. How does that feel correlate into Bitcoin? How is it helping you?
I mean, there's so many facets that to that question. Bitcoin, really, what it did for me is it bought me my freedom.
Okay.
And I say that because I've just been investing it since 2017, slowly and surely, you know, the saying stacking sats. And then finally this past year, it paid off and it bought me enough time for me to start my own business. And there was no better thing to pick a business around than what I love to read about, Bitcoin. So
yeah. I think I'm heading in that direction too, man. It's incredible. I started in 2017, and this is just a pure confession. I started in 2017, but I was treating it like it was a stock. And as soon as I saw the plummet, I bailed out. I got completely out of there. Now, I came back of October of last year, 2020, which is right before that big run, which I'm thankful for. But this time around, I actually went in trying to know what Bitcoin was, right? And understand the technology. And I happened to bump into, you know, I'm sure you follow them, the great Twitter community that's out there for Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. It happened to correlate where I bumped right into that community, the Bree Loves of the world, the Michael Saylors, of course, and that philosophy part of Bitcoin really wrapped me up. Right. And now I'm happy to be here. Like you stacking sats and like, I haven't got the freedom yet. I still work my 9-to-5,
yeah.
But just listening to what you just experienced just gives me more hope for what's about to come for me, man. So super excited.
Right. Yeah. We're still so early too. So it's like, just, it's only a matter of time before you could really tackle whatever you're doing, whatever you want to do full time. Yeah. So a similar situation with me. Like I said, I got back in 2017 and around that time I was maybe like 20, 21 years old. I never really did stock investing or any of that stuff. Like I didn't really have a grasp of that. But this is during like the 2017 bull run. So I saw like a news article or something. It just got like piqued my interest. And I was like, what is this stuff? So reading and reading and reading and learning led to me finally buying some myself. And then from there, I just saw the number go up and up and up. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. I made some money doing this.
Yeah.
And then, yeah. So I guess throughout 2017 to 2018, that's when I was at Penn State University. And I was dragging along my one friend, Sam. He'd come with me to the blockchain club and the Bitcoin club. And there are these kids there that were just, they're like computer science majors, like complete nerds. And we were just looking at each other like, what are these kids talking about with blockchain, whatever all this stuff is, hash rate? So, you know, the last couple of years, I was learning about it here and there, still investing, not a ton of money, but, you know, still had some exposure. And then I'd say really when the pandemic happened in March, that's when I really bootstrapped myself and dug into like, what is money? What are banks? Like, what's Bitcoin? What's cryptocurrencies? And then now I'm just full blown. This is my life. So happy to be here.
Yeah, it's incredible. I guess I was late to that sense because I got a book that's releasing tomorrow. Not a shameless plug, but the point I bring that up is because while you figured that out in the beginning of the pandemic, I actually derailed. My business went to crap. Physically, I went to crap. You know, health wise, I went to crap. So I was going the opposite direction, and I caught on a little late. But you're right. As soon as as soon as that explanation of what money really is, which was around October for me, was a question that I asked myself, and I went to pursue the answer for, Bitcoin was right there, ready to smack me in the face with, you know, hey, what you're saving for is trash. And I was one of those savers that was always wondering, like, how come I keep putting, you know, pretty much dollar cost averaging into my savings account and ending up just barely getting back, right? Like,
yeah, I know. It makes sense that, like, hey, if you're putting money away and you're saving money, like, you should see a pile grow, and that pile never really grows that much. So, like, what's happening here?
Right.
That's really the main question I think people need to ask themselves.
Yeah. So, but that's also the biggest friction, I think. So the next question would be is, how do you start breaking this down to people that are so used to savings being the tool, right? Like how have success rate with that? Is that really hard? Because for me, it is. People just don't want to get away from the Capital Ones and the, you know, 1% interest that they're getting.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'll put it this way. You ever hear the word paradigm shift?
Yes.
It's a phrase, paradigm shift, right? And a paradigm shift is something that it's just so game-changing and world-changing the way you see the world that it'll change you forever once you understand that paradigm shift.
Yeah.
Right. So for both of us, like, we were born into the system where, like, yeah, you use cash every day, you get a savings account with the bank. They hook you up, you know, you put money into it, they help you save and all that. But what's happening right now in this digital age, that's all coming to an end. And we're transitioning to this whole new money system, I guess. So when you think of it that way, I think you have to take a step back and think, oh, my whole life, I was doing this one thing. This is how I was exchanging goods and buying and selling things. Now that's changing, and I think a lot of people are not willing to accept that change.
Right.
And whether it be Bitcoin or any other of the coins, whatever, all I could say is this new system's here to stay. I don't know what exactly that coin's going to be or whatever that currency's going to be, but this is a whole different landscape. So I think that's been my first step in trying to describe what Bitcoin is to people. And like, the next thing I think really to think about is what you were touching on before. It's what's up with my savings account? Like, why, even if I have $1,000 in my savings account, I get like one penny in interest, like a month.
Literally. Yeah.
Yeah. And I, every time I see that, I just laugh to myself. I was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you, like, for me, I'm a pretty young guy, like I'm 25 years old, but when I talk to my parents who are much older, they're like, it used to not be that way. It's like a savings account. You used to be able to put money in it and then it would grow. There was an incentive for you to save money.
Yeah.
But now our whole system is credit based. And it's like, hey, if you make 50K a year in your job, go get a $300,000 loan, a mortgage loan. Like that's all just like a credit system that's slowly falling apart. So that's the next part I try to go with people. And then I did get like more down the rabbit hole, but I think those are the two fundamental things to bring up to someone that has no idea what Bitcoin is.
Yeah. Yeah. I try to go from the aspect that me and you briefly talked about in the DMs about, you know, the Spanish community and just education in general. And to me, what's been successful for me, if I were to say, is explaining what an asset is. Okay. I don't think that me specifically, my parents and I never talked about money. It was literally like, hey, can I get 20 bucks? Here you go. Go do whatever the hell. Just get out of my face. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was one of those things. The game that I missed out on, and I think most Spanish people missed out on, is the fact that you can put your money in this vessel, this asset, this thing, and that makes money while you sleep, gets more valuable, and then you can cash out. Now, it may seem like a no-brainer to people. Like, yeah, that's the key. But in the Spanish community, that's not the key because we haven't been told this stuff. Nobody tells us this stuff. So I think explaining Bitcoin as an asset, like, okay, you don't understand the technology, you know, dollar cost averaging until you understand the technology. But for right now, all you need to know is that this is the game that people who have money, wealth are playing in. And whether it's Bitcoin, whether it's, you know, paintings, whether it's, you know, whatever it is, put your money in something that's more than just your bank account or your credit union account. And then when I kind of see that light bulb moment, that's kind of when I start walking them down, you know, similar to where you were walking down. So that's worked.
Maybe that's even a better place to start. You're right. Yeah. I'm still trying to figure this out in real time too. Like where do I start with people? And I would just add on to that. My brother gave me a book when I was about a freshman in high school. It's called Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. And that book basically explains why rich people are rich and poor people are poor.
Right.
Once you understand assets and understand liabilities and how one hurts you and how one helps you, then you're unstoppable. So anyone's interested in learning more about just the foundations of investing, just pick up that book and read it. It's not that long. It'll take you a couple of days to read.
Yeah, it's definitely a classic. I picked it up. Unfortunately for me, I just wasn't. I didn't use the information to my disposal. So
yeah.
But now that I know what I know, you're right. That book actually does cover it very well. And this doesn't necessarily need to be a racial thing, by the way. I just kind of think that, you know, when you're low income, you're low poverty, that asset financial education situation just it first of all it's not presented to you because your parents are not doing it most likely. And it's hard. You would have to be like Bill Gates with the only computer and like 150 square miles or whatever, be that lucky guy to get financial information. But the reason I seem so wild away by the asset thing is because I've told this to a few people that know about assets and are actually investing, and they just look at me like I showed up late to the game.
And I mean people are all different stages in their lives, and it really comes down to like, who's your mentor in life? Who's teaching you like how to do things right and how to do things wrong? And unfortunately, maybe it'd be your parents. Like my parents were like that too. They're not the biggest investors. Like they taught me really great things about life, but they didn't have that, the background of investing and like, okay, this is how you build wealth. So fortunately I had some other people in my life that showed me the way and got me started on the journey, kind of like lay that foundation for me. And then now my curiosity just took me somewhere else. So like, even just somewhere like this podcast, if I could just help one person to help realize that, like, doesn't matter where you came from, just
learn,
start learning.
Yeah.
And if you want good resources, like just reach out to me and I'll hook you up.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the landscape now, right? I mean, this is like, they can be at work listening to this podcast. They can be. Now go back to when you and I were much younger, and it's probably a long shot that they were going to get this conversation or hear this value, or not be charged for this value, right? There's a lot of charlatans out there. So,
So yeah, I agree with you though. It's time, you know, if you hear this conversation or anything like it, you know, reach out to Eric, reach out to us, because like I said, I didn't know this and people were looking at me like I was insane for not knowing this, but no, my tool that my dad told me was basically, hey man, save a little bit of money for a rainy day, but grind your ass off. That's all I got. Those are the only tools I got. It wasn't like, hey, put it in this. I didn't know about deflationary assets, right? Like I was the guy that came from the projects where, you know, you would have like the Honda Civic with the big EVs in the back and you were trying to blow out the system. Just spending money in the stupidest of fashions. I think that's just what they told us to do. It was just live it, get it and live it.
Right. Yeah. And I don't even think that's necessarily stupid. Like, I think money is a tool. Like, you can use it to have fun. Like, I just came back from Miami literally last night. And yeah, I use money as a tool to have fun. Like, I got a plane flight there and I had a hotel and had a really good time. But you have to, like, be conscious of what you're spending money on and make those decisions. Do I really need this? Right. So that's another key tip I would say I learned throughout the years.
Delay gratification, that one of those things.
Yeah.
Balance it out. So you are involved in two of my favorite things, education and Bitcoin.
Right? Yes.
So you mashed them together. This is what your business is. Let's talk about your business.
Sure. Yeah. I guess let me rewind for a second. So after I graduated from college in 2018, I went and got a civil engineering job designing gas pipelines in Baltimore and Washington, D.C.
Nice.
Wow. It was cool. It was fun and all that stuff, but I knew I wanted a little something more. So on the side, like I tried starting a real estate business. My brother and I tried starting a kid's YouTube channel for his kids, tried growing that. So I always had something going on, like just trying to get out of the corporate life basically.
Yeah.
And then, so like I said, like I explained before, I've been following this Bitcoin thing for a while and then went down the rabbit hole hard back in like last March. And then it kind of like clicked to me that there's a big gap right now between education and cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin. Like I wanted to be that guy to take the expert knowledge and dumb it down in a way that the common person can understand.
Sure.
Because most people don't understand, like even myself, I still struggle with a lot of like the intense computer science part of it, but that's what I'm trying to do. So I try to think of myself as, you know who Neil deGrasse Tyson is?
I do.
Yeah, Neil deGrasse Tyson, he's the man. He brought science education down to the masses along with Carl Sagan.
Yeah.
So what I'm trying to do is do the same thing for cryptocurrencies. Trying to make it fun and easy to understand. So right now what I'm doing is I'm building out a fully online education platform where we're going to start at the very basics, Bitcoin 101. Cryptocurrencies 101, how to buy Bitcoin, how to store Bitcoin safely. I'm trying to give people options to educate themselves in a really easy, simple way to understand. And then from that, I'm just trying to build it up more and more. And then I guess my long run goal would be to start creating maybe some kind of fund where I just take in friends and family and whoever's money. We're going to create a big pile of Bitcoin basically and use that to make more Bitcoin.
Nice. So, yeah,
that's my game plan right now.
Super cool. So how long have you had it all up and running?
It's a good question. So I literally quit my job less than 2 months ago, and I've been going full time at it. Yeah, I made some great progress so far, and I'm basically like ready to launch. I've been soft launching it, have friends and family like beta testing it, and now it's basically ready to go. So yeah, any day here, really, I'm going to have like an official launch. And so if anyone's interested, my website is called hoodiecrypto.com. That's HoodieCrypto.com. That's where you can find the education. I write a daily newsletter and all that stuff. And then next, I also just locked in the bitcoinedu.com.
Nice.
So I'm kind of rebranding it. So like anyone that's like 30 years and younger, it's going to be Hoodie Crypto, a little more like, I guess, for that demographic, you know. Anyone of like 30 years or older, it's going to be a little more formal, professional, Bitcoin EDU, Bitcoin education.
That's super dope, man.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to launching Bitcoin EDU soon too as well.
Yeah, that's really cool. And that you locked down that domain name is super powerful.
You have no idea how much time I put into that.
Yeah. And I'm subscribed to the newsletters. Listeners, if you guys go check out that newsletter, it's really good, filled with info for sure. I want to go back because I'm near this myself and I can't let you go on without bringing it back up. So
yeah, let's do
you,
it.
You just quit your job.
Yep.
I am there. Like I show up to work every day with this feeling of I need to get the hell out of here. So how did it go, man? How was the feeling, the days leading up to it? Did you do the whole 6 months expenses thing? How did it go, man? How'd you go about it?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I guess the very first thing I did that I've been doing for years is I calculate my monthly expenses. And what I've been doing over the years is trying to lower my monthly expenses. So when I moved to Baltimore, you know, I was paying like $900 a month in rent. I did that for my first 2 years here. And I was like, that's a very big monthly expense. I need to cut that down. So the first thing I decided to do is buy a house here. So I bought a house and then have my girlfriend lives with me. So we split a room together. And then we have her best friend here and another girl. And they're helping pay off the mortgage, basically. So now I live for free. So that's $900 a month that I'm saving. So that's, think about that in terms of hours. Like, it's just so much time and money saved. So what I did is I looked at my monthly expenses, like look at your credit card reports and all that, your statements, just figure out what you can cut out, try to minimize that. And I cut mine down to less than like $1,500 a month. Nice. I'm really like, if I want to be like really cheap about things, I can get it down to like $1,100-$1,200 a month.
Yeah.
And when you think about that, now all I need is like maybe $15,000 a year to like just live.
Yeah, right.
And I know like for a lot of people that does sound hard, but you can get to a place where if you build up enough money, then you can eventually make that leap and say, so that's basically what I did. I cut my expenses all the way down and I figured out, okay, I have enough money saved up for a good amount, like 6 months to a year, that I can do whatever I want, live super cheap. And then once that clicked for me and I was like, it's now or never, I did it. And I don't want to say that was easy because I worked at my job for the last 2.5 years.
Right.
And I had butterflies in my stomach and all that. Like, I didn't want to leave that place. But at the same time, I knew there was something better on the other side. So I remember just waking up one morning and just said, you know what? I'm not logging into work today.
Nice. That's a beautiful feeling. I can't wait.
Yeah, man. And I don't want to underestimate how challenging that was.
Yeah.
It was very psychologically challenging to finally say, I'm just not doing it today.
Well, yeah, that's what I want to get into now. Before we get into it, the mental fortitude, but I just want to give you a rundown of where I'm at. I'm one of the guys that got stuck behind having these mandatory things to pay, right? So now I have a mortgage and it's, you know, it's about $1,400. I got 4 kids. So we're increasing that price hike up, right? And so it's like, it doesn't mean that, you know, the touchdown or the goal is far away from leaving my 9-to-5, but now I have to be that much more calculated, right? So I have the 5 or the 6 months, but now my philosophy is as well, you know, Bitcoin is on a hot streak. Now is the time to be able to push as much currency as I can into it to catch that wave, right?
Yep.
So what I'm thinking is I'm going to just, you know, stick this 9-to-5 as long as I can so I don't slow down my investing.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very noble thing to do. Exactly. And I was contemplating that as well. I was like, either I can just keep working my job and just keep investing into Bitcoin and other assets, or I can go full time and do it.
Yeah.
Because I want to bring this point up too, which my brother taught me. It's this concept of brain power. So to me, that concept meant 40 hours per week, I was learning about gas pipeline engineering. And honestly, I didn't really care that much about it.
Right.
Like as a job. So 40 hours a week, that's 40 hours of brain power I'm dedicating to that. And then plus, just think about that when you're laying in bed at night, like you're thinking about work and stuff. So probably more than 40 hours per week you're spending, you're spending on this thing. And so the way I put it in my brain was, okay, what if I took that 40 hours and put it into something, was this one thing I want to do which is Bitcoin, basically Bitcoin education. And I do 120 hours per week, brain power into that.
Yeah.
And since I did that, man, you can just see things take off.
Right.
Trying to do something part-time compared to trying to do something full-time and putting your entire life into something. Yeah. That's when the magic happens.
Which, yeah, I got to free up that time. I keep using, sort of like Michael Saylor keeps using the melting ice cube for your savings account example. That's how I feel at my job, man. I'm like, I can complete this 8-hour job in 2 hours tops, right? Because it requires very little skill. I could do it pretty much blindfolded. And now
that's
how I was. Yeah. Now I have to sit here for the next 6 hours or so and just melt away like an ice cube, man. It's killing me. Yeah.
Yeah. It takes time to like build that up. I would say it took me years to finally realize that.
Yeah.
So once you get to that point and you're like, there's got to be more to life. I want something challenging in life. I want to challenge myself and be excited at what I do every day.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, man.
I just want to add it. I'm 25 years old. I don't have kids.
Yeah.
I barely have any debt to my name. Thank the Lord, because my dad worked his ass off to make sure I didn't have a bunch of college debt like some of my friends. So I had a lot of things given to me in a way, but I also worked really hard for what I had. You have responsibilities in life and you have to weigh that as a factor. Like for you, I think with your kids and all that, it's definitely way harder to make that leap.
Yeah.
So just want to consider that too before you make any crazy decisions overnight like I did.
Yeah, definitely. No, yeah. And I have a very humble and loyal wife that makes sure I don't jump off the cliff.
Oh, yeah. That's what you need, man.
Yeah, yeah. So
you need the girl.
But that's what I was going to say. It may sound like a cop out, but having the kids there as a factor just makes the decision that much more tightrope.
I understand.
Yeah. But definitely getting there, like you said, definitely have the mentality to say enough is enough. Now, thanks to Bitcoin and what we're seeing, have the vessel to get there faster, if that makes any sense, to store that time. But, you know, it's one of those things where, I didn't let you know this, but before I had my derail moment last year, I actually had a digital marketing company and I was making really good money part time. So,
oh, cool.
So like you, I was kind of like, what happens if I take this full time? Right.
Right.
But I derailed last year and completely lost all my clients and everything. And now I'm in the process of like doing websites again like that and like getting my way back up there.
Yeah.
As I reteach myself, you know, the newer things of marketing and Facebook ads and all that. But yeah, man, once you get to that point I agree with you. I'm already at that where like, where can I get the opportunity anywhere to get the hell out of this place?
Right. Yeah. And it takes that one day where you're just like, it's now or never.
Yeah. No, I'll get there. And if I remember, I'll shoot you a text message.
Yeah, man. I hope you do. Please do. Yeah.
So let's talk about Pokemon cards, man.
Yeah, let's do it. I love Pokemon with all my heart.
Yeah. All right. I can't say all my heart, but I'm with you up to the first 151 Pokemon.
Okay. Yeah.
I have kids. They love Pokemon. I have no idea where they're at right now. I don't know what's happening. I don't.
Honestly, me neither. No, I'm up to like maybe the first like 350 or so.
Okay.
I forget exactly how much. And then I lost track after that. I was like, this is getting ridiculous. There was like a Pokemon made off like a chandelier and stuff. And I was like, you guys just lost your creativity.
Yeah. So what got you into Pokemon cards? Is just your age? You just came across
it? Yeah, man. So like I said, I'm 25 and I think Pokemon came out like the TV show and all that sometime around the like mid 90s.
Yep.
So right when I was born, like that was emerging. So I grew up with it, like all the Game Boy games and all that. I collected all the cards and the whole nine yards of Pokemon. And even like in high school and stuff, like I would bring my Game Boy and Nintendo DS to high school and I would play it just like, can I curse in this podcast?
Yeah, of course.
I'm sure you
can.
Don't care, right? Yeah. I didn't give a fuck what people thought. Like, I would like my one and only detention in school was from playing Pokemon in my like English class.
Like, nice.
That's how committed I was to this shit. I just loved it. So, go ahead.
No, I'm a little bit older, so I'm 34. So I actually was like when it was red versus blue. I was around for that time, right? So I chose blue. Blue was my one to go with or whatever. Mm-hmm. And like you, I just went down. I played everything from like the Pokemon Snaps of the world to just anything that could be Pokemon. I was hooked on it. I was hooked on the cards. Never got a Charizard, but had a really nice collection going on or whatever. Uh-huh. And then it just kind of went away from me, man. But I still try to keep myself in pulse, but it's insane. But like you, I had an addiction to it. My Game Boy was with me everywhere I went.
Right. Sure. Yeah. And then Pokemon Go came out as well. So I was playing that. I remember during my one internship, like when the boss wasn't looking, I'd pull it out and go try to find some Pokemon. So yeah, it was just always been my life. And then I guess more recently, just seeing how much these cards are worth nowadays. Yeah. That's when I really got back into these last like 6 months or so.
Have you? So what's the landscape
like? Not like super hardcore. It's just a hobby. I just like collecting them and try to flip them here and there.
I was about to say, well, when we talk about assets, these things are assets, no?
It's an asset. Yeah. Just think about it. You buy it for one price today and hope in the next 5 years or so, the price goes up and you sell it. So
what's the landscape on the Pokemon card community right now? Is it lucrative? Is it
out of control, to be honest?
Like NFT out of control or out of control?
Yeah, yeah. Almost. Like people are paying like the OG Charizard's going for like hundreds of thousands of dollars. And just to think about that, like a tiny piece of cardboard is going for hundreds of thousands of dollars. Blows my mind.
Yeah, it's insane. Yeah.
Just, and I guess
just
so
the Charizard though, right? The other ones are kind of not.
There's
not
some
competing.
Other ones too as well.
Yeah.
But Charizard's definitely the go-to guy. Like if you have a Charizard first edition from the 90s, you're in business.
Yeah, you got something good.
And in good condition.
Yeah, gem mint for sure.
Yeah.
So what's your favorite Pokemon?
It's a good question. Mine is probably, I've always liked Dragonite.
Dragonite. All right, interesting.
Yeah, you know Dragonite?
I do know Dragonite. Yeah, I got it right here. My daughter gave me this a few days ago. I got a Bulbasaur. This came right here. There we go.
Love it. Yeah.
Yeah. I got a Bulbasaur hanging on my desk that my daughter
I
gave
love
me.
That.
This is actually holographic. Obviously, is one of the newer ones. And it came in a McDonald's Happy Meal.
Nice. Does it say the year on the bottom there?
Does it say on the year? Literally this year, 2021 Pokemon.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah,
so that's the key. If you find the ones from the 90s, you're in luck.
Oh yeah, I did not think this had any value whatsoever. I actually think they have the Pikachu 25th anniversary here tag on it somewhere. But
cool,
Bulbasaur is my favorite. She noticed.
Hold on to that for another 20 years. Maybe it'll be worth something.
Absolutely. It actually says here 1 of 25. So I might have to hold on to this for sure.
Do it, man. Do it. Yeah. Never know. And yeah, just to add to that, growing up, I had all these Pokemon cards and. Today they're worth like I'd say my collection was probably like worth today like $100,000.
Wow.
But what I did was I let my nieces and nephews play with them and they basically destroyed most of them. So when you take a mint condition card or a near mint card and you let little kids play with them, then now they're virtually worthless. And it's just such a heartbreaker to me because it's like, wow, I spent all that time collecting that and now they're worth like nothing. But they love Pokemon too, so I'm glad I can provide that to them.
Definitely, yeah. So why Dragonite? Right.
Why Dragonite? I don't know.
Dragonite evolves from Dragonair?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
It's Dratini, Dragonair, I think, and then Dragonite.
Cool.
I just always liked the artwork, I think. He was just super cool. He kind of is like a Charizard.
Yeah,
but he's
more. A softer one.
Yeah, he's a softer one, but he's a Dragon-type Pokemon, so.
Yeah.
I always liked him a lot.
That's super dope. Yeah, Nintendo just has a way of just reusing their stuff, but it's epic. It's like lifetime stuff. Like you could be 87 years old and still love Mario, Pokemon. There's only a handful. Yeah, I don't have a Switch or anything right now, but I still keep my eye on anything that's Zelda or Link related, of course. I love that stuff, man. It's great.
And I like to think of this in terms of back to the assets investing. Mm-hmm. Gary V mentioned this. I know we talked previously about Gary V.
Yeah.
And it's the idea of nostalgia. And I think especially Pokemon, like someone like me, mid-20s and getting older now, I think it's just going to keep going up in value because the nostalgia that I get from it's unlike anything else.
Yeah.
So when you talk about Pokemon, Zelda, Super Mario Brothers, anything like that's older that you can think in the next 20 years or so people will still be into and get that nostalgic feeling from it, it's gonna be worth something. I'm not gonna say it's gonna be a home run, but
I agree. I think one of when NFT started first coming around or becoming popular or whatever, one of the first things that I told a buddy of mine was I would pay for a holographic Charizard like NFT, right? Like a digital one that's like moving and maybe doing some flamethrower stuff, you know. I would pay for that, but you know, I don't know. People may call me silly, but there's people that still pay like $4,000 for Jordan sneakers.
Yeah, people are paying hundreds of thousands of dollars for Michael Jordan cards too, and Jordan sneakers, and really anything.
If you
touch nostalgia in any way, no matter what the medium may be, you can provide value somehow to someone and cash out.
And cash out, right? And it doesn't have to be millions of dollars, but from what you got it originally, let's say a cartridge was like $20 at a flea market for like a Super Nintendo, you know, Zelda cartridge or anything like that. Flip that for like $3,000-$4,000 later on.
Yeah, those finds are awesome. Yeah, and it gives you like a rush too.
Yeah, what I would like to find is Ocarina of Time, the gold cartridge. Uh-huh. I don't know.
I know what that is. Yeah, those are worth some money.
I would hope to try to find one of those. Also, Majora's Mask. I think they had like either a blue or a black one. Mm-hmm. That was limited edition. I'll drop another one just because we're there in the N64. The all yellow Donkey Kong 64.
Yeah, I was gonna bring that one up next.
Yes.
Yeah.
So yeah, see, I'm with you, man. I try to collect that stuff. Now, do you know anything about the comic book space? Because I have a closet full of comic books. Now, I inherited this. Okay, uh-huh. I inherited this. I don't know anything besides the obvious, like number one Marvel or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know what I have. And I asked a few people online, and they were basically just telling me, hey, it's better to use it as gift wrapping paper. Like, it's worthless. And I'm like, that's a lot. It's probably like over 350 comics in there.
Yeah, I don't agree with that.
Yeah, I just don't know where to go. That's why I ask. But
yeah, no worries. Just definitely link up with an expert and have them walk you through it.
Yeah,
or you can spend thousands of hours trying to figure out the ins and outs of it, and I don't know if it's worth your time or not if you're not like that into it.
No, I'm not. And I tried when I first got the crate, I tried to like look at a few, and it was just tedious. It was like some of them were like $2 on eBay, another one was like $7, and I was like, I'm not gonna sell these individually,
right?
At $7 a pop. Although if Gary V's listening, he'll probably be mad at me for saying that. That I'm not gonna sell it.
I think we should talk about Gary V for a minute here.
Go ahead, man. Shoot.
Yeah, the guy's been in my ear since probably 2016, 2017.
He's a consistent guy for sure.
Yeah, and I just got addicted to his content. And like, I think he really laid out the foundation to where I am today in terms of investing and like what it means to big flip stuff and being nice to people and like the abundance mentality thing. Like, it really developed me as a character. So I'm just like super grateful for that guy. And also, I think the reason we linked up on Twitter is because I saw he was following you and I was like, huh, that's weird. Yeah. Wonder how this guy knows Gary V.
Right.
So that led to us talking and all that. And then now we're here on a podcast.
Yeah.
So yeah, that super guy, cool, yeah. I owe that guy a lot, to be honest.
I didn't know that it was because of Gary V, by the way. And until you brought it up, I forgot that whole experience happened.
Yeah.
But it definitely shows what type of guy he is. I've reached out to a lot of people on Twitter. You know, I don't like to use the term celebrity, but, you know, well-known figures or whatever like him. And, you just get ignored. You're just one of the smaller guys. I mean, I'm not going to blame it on them specifically. You maybe get lost in the shuffle, right? I'm sure they get millions of messages. But Gary V just happened to say, hey, man, I'm going to not only respond to you, but I'm going to give you a follow. Why the fuck not?
Yeah, great guy. And then that tiny little thing he did for you.
Yeah.
It goes a long way, man. It goes a long way. Just another lesson learned for me, at least.
Yeah, shout out to Gary V, man.
Yeah.
We're going to have to get him in a sit down. So
hopefully one day.
Yeah, so you're into real estate investment, and I bought my house last year, so I am starting to get into that game. But the further we go down this, you know, orange pill rabbit hole and what's happening, what's your take on real estate going forward? Is it still a smart investment? Is it tied too much to fiat?
That's a really good question. So if you look at all the traditional forms of investing, real estate has been the king ever since we had private property rights. Real estate's been the king. So many people made their money, their wealth from real estate. But I think back to that idea of paradigm shift in Bitcoin, I think that landscape's changing. And I love real estate because it's a physical thing. You can touch it, it grows in value and all that. But there's still some downsides to it. Like where I'm at, in Baltimore City, in Maryland, and just the taxes are ridiculous. So if the government decides to keep raising taxes, then it's like a less of a good investment, I guess. That's right. Less money in my pocket.
Right.
Whereas Bitcoin, it's appreciating so much higher, and all I have to do is like let it sit there, and I don't get taxed at all. Right. Unless I like take it out, you know, sell it, get capital gains tax and all that. But so right now, I'm on the border of. I was planning to buy another house by this time, but I would have had one possession. And I was like, you know what? Right now, Bitcoin's a better investment. So I put that on hold for now. Still planning on getting more places, building out my portfolio, but Bitcoin's really the number one asset to have right now.
Yeah. So would you recommend anybody get into real estate, or would it just be, hey, only if it's your domicile type thing? What would you recommend?
Well, real estate has a bunch of different ways to get into it. Right. I got into it this way, and I built a business around it this way. It's called wholesaling. And the whole idea basically is you try to get a house for cheaper than its market value. And you can do that morally too. You know, I'm not trying to like scam someone out, sell me your house for 50 cents on the dollar.
Right.
Like people go into major debt and dig themselves into holes, and they need a way to get out before they get foreclosed on. So wholesaling is a way to help people out, get out of their it's more of a liability to them than a house that's just costing way too much. Help them get out of that hole. You buy it from them and you can go take that contract and sell it to someone else. And you can do that without actually buying the house. You're just like taking a contract and giving it to another investor or whoever.
Right.
So that's one way. That's how I got into wholesaling. Do that with $0 really. And then what I'm transitioning now to is rental properties, and then trying to do Airbnbs next and all that. So that's over the next couple of years here. That's really what I'll be trying to build as well.
That's a smart move. So you're staying away from buying, and obviously you're content with your roommates and not having to pay any mortgage or anything. So you're not trying to actually buy a house to live in?
I will.
Okay.
But for me right now, it's just kind of fun. I like having roommates. Yeah, it's coming. Like I mentioned before, I just came back from Miami, and I think my girlfriend and I, we're going to be, our next house is going to be like a condo there that we're going to Airbnb out. So
nice.
Yeah. Slowly building my portfolio up and just learning more every day.
Yeah. So you're not necessarily leaving because of what's happening with fiat, the real estate market. You're just playing more careful. Is that
exactly. Right. Cause I don't want to buy high, sell low.
Yeah.
I want to do the opposite. Exactly. And everything, the real estate market right now is through the roof. And so, Yeah.
See, I just bought this house. So, you know, and my kids later were comfortable. We're around schools and all that. But I've been told the same thing. Like around here, prices are like extremely high. I've already pretty much 2.5x what I purchased in at.
That's awesome.
I'm like, but
cash
you know,
out, my man.
I know. But, it's weird to think that it would get better. This is probably like best case scenario. It's about to go plummet some other direction.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what, you know, once again, it's like, there's no plan, I guess is the best way I could put it. Like, where do I go? My kids are at school, literally right up the street and down the street.
Right.
They're young. If I go, I got 2.5x, but there's going to be a lot of resistance in living, right? There's going to be a lot of getting used to it. There's no plan right now in place for that.
Yeah. And I think for your situation, I think a good move to be looking to like getting a duplex, a triplex, or a quadplex, all the way up to 4 units, where like your family, you and your family could live in one giant unit and rent out the rest of them. And then you can basically pay off the mortgage and just live for free.
Yeah. That's
so
true.
That's definitely a strategy that works as well.
Definitely got to talk about that more on the,
on the personal level.
Yeah, for sure. So, before we get in humans and going to Mars, the Twitter conversation we were having, that's not really correlated to that, but code destroying the world or nukes destroying the world? What's up? Give the listeners where you were at on that.
So I guess let me rewind for a second. Elon Musk has always been a very big, idol to me. I've just been following what he's been doing for the past decade almost. So I get a lot of my warning signs from him, and his biggest warning sign right now is the code stuff. It's the thing about AI artificial intelligence, general intelligence, that stuff. So as threatening as nukes are, and I mean, any day countries can launch nukes at each other and just destroy the Earth, I think we're transitioning past that. And yeah, I think code, anything to do with computer code and hacking virtual systems, even through like some type of intelligence, that's what's kind of scary. Because if you can hack the computer codes, then you can launch the nukes.
Right. I'm with you on that side. I thought we were on opposing sides, but no, I agree with you 100%. I'm one of the proponents of, these next war or wars, however many they are going to be, they're not going to require gunpowder. These things are going to be all digital.
It's going to be in cyberspace.
And it's going to be, it's going to be insane. Now I've done light coding in my life. I've used to do some Android apps and stuff. That's nowhere near what these guys are doing. But I have an appreciation for the type of magic that you can produce with your fingertips when it comes to coding.
Me too. Yeah. I'm not a coder either. And I do admire those people.
Yeah. Yeah. They're able to, magic is the best way, but they're able to literally solve problems with lettered words, just genius people. But yeah, I agree. If you can hack the nukes, you're going to launch the nukes. This might be dumb to say, but I don't really think any country is in the best interest to even want to nuke somebody.
Yes, no. I think it's more of a threat. I think it's the option to. That's where all the power comes from. I don't think they really want to per se.
Yeah, because you lose that whole area in a sense, right?
Yeah.
Like you're not going to be able to like drop a nuke and then go in there and like grow a society in that area. That area is pretty much gone. You just removed it from the face of the earth.
Yeah, all the radiation for decades to come.
Yeah, like, so I don't see the benefit in that. But yeah, I think all this stuff is scary. I think that's what Bitcoin is enticing to me. I was actually reading, Bitcoin is Time. I think is a GG article.
Yeah, my guy.
Yeah, incredible stuff. And being able to, him being able to delve into what Satoshi was able to solve when it comes to time stamping and when it comes to proof of work and all that.
Yeah.
These damn coders, man.
Yeah, it's incredible, I can barely grasp it still. And I'm glad there's guys like GG and there's some other titans out there, experts that can bring this information down to our level. I'm trying to like hold on to and understand it, and still hard for me to.
Yeah, I just think it's getting at the reference of the Matrix get old, but they are very relevant. But I think it's just that whole grasping that none of this stuff that we've been believing is actually real. And that's another one of those territories where Bitcoin always seems to prod this, hey, that's not true. You've been believing that, but this isn't true.
Yeah,
And that's scary. That's scary for a lot of people.
Yeah, and I have an open mind.
Yeah, same here.
That's what it comes down to. Just have an open mind, be willing to learn, and be curious.
I got one for you on Elon Musk. So my brother-in-law, which is my co-host and talking in bits or whatever, he labels Elon Musk an alien, right? Because his argument is how can you succeed at everything you put your hands on?
Yeah.
This guy mastered PayPal, right? Mastered money in a sense that, exchanging. Now he's on to bigger and better things. He mastered the car, the electric car. He's mastered space, apparently. Like, how can this guy get it done?
I think it's raw intelligence, execution, and luck. Because he, as a kid, if you read the history of, like, his life, he was always a really brilliant kid, IQ off the charts. And then throughout his life, he just executed in different ways and built businesses like PayPal and Tesla and all that stuff. But there's also a giant portion of luck. Like, SpaceX would not be around right now if I think they had like three launches, right? When they very first started. And if it wasn't for that, the first two launches failed. If it wasn't for, I think, the third one, then the company wouldn't have existed. They would have just went bankrupt, basically. So just take that into consideration too. Like, you can do everything right in life. You can be the smartest guy in the world. If you don't have a little bit of luck, it's just not gonna work out.
And being right place, right time, right?
Like right place, right time, right time period as well.
That's huge.
When computers are just starting to take off, like, it's there's so many different facets to it. But I really think those are like the three things that make really great successful people in the world.
Sure. I think the only weird thing that I think he's going, considering that he is against AI and coding and those things, is the Neuralink.
Yeah.
I'm excited about Neuralink. Obviously, I would want people that can't, you know, physically walk or physically move, be able to do these things again. But for the same reason he's afraid of AI, which is code, it's the same exact reason that I'm a little worried about having this device that can be, you know, it needs to broadcast, that could be manipulated inside of somebody's head. I think that's really, really scary. And when we talk about, you know, we know about, you know, basically not having any ownership or no governance in Bitcoin, right? You don't want a company to have the power to be in people's heads all the time, no?
I agree. Yeah. But what are we going to do? It's, I mean, you can try to fight it all you want, but I think your time's more well spent trying to do other things in the world. Like, yeah, he's going to do what he's going to do, regardless of what you think. Right. And I think it's good you bring this up as a warning. And I think he, like Elon himself, realizes the potential it has on either making human civilization prosper or putting us in the dirt. So I would rather put it in someone's hands that are conscious of that, rather than just some let some rogue computer scientist in middle of nowhere release some software that just takes over the world, some Black Mirror episode or something like that. Yeah,
I mean, I'm excited for it, just worried about it. It's just one step closer to like that cyberpunk world, right? Where we'll be replacing our eyeballs with more powerful eyeballs and things like that. I know that sounds weird, but that's the type of future I kind of see, right?
I'd see the same thing happening basically. Like, think about it now. We spend our entire days in our phones and our laptops. So we basically are a computer. So now, instead of looking at your phone in front of you all day, it's just going to be directly in your brain.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not the one to say whether or not that's a good thing, but it's definitely going to make our civilization progress if we can figure out not how to kill ourselves doing it.
For sure. So does Elon get us to Mars?
He's the only man that's doing it right now.
In our lifetime?
Yeah. And like, that's what I love about it. Because at least for me, I'm a huge fan of space and rocketry and all that. And he's the only one doing it. And he gives me something to look forward to. Like, I try to watch every single SpaceX launch they do, the live ones. And they get better and better each year. So yeah, it excites me. And then just think about this. And the next 5 years, 10 years, we're going to have our first human baby born on another planet. They're going to be a literal Martian. So when that's you bring incredible. Aliens into the question, like, yeah, I think probably aliens are real. We're going to make it real, even if they're not real right now.
Yeah. I've never thought about that. That's interesting, actually. I think aliens exist for what most people probably think, which is probability. Like, it can't just be us, that whole thing. But I do, this is a fun fact. As a kid in the third grade, I was actually invited as a third grader to go to a kindergarten class and talk solar system, because I was super into the solar system and space. Not so much as an adult, but I do have a history for it. I'm sure you'll appreciate this. Interstellar is probably one of my favorite movies of all time.
Same.
Christopher Nolan. Shout out to Christopher Nolan. I think he gets us there. I don't know the timetable. If I were to guess, maybe when I'm an old dude. Like, I don't know if it'll be any time where I could, you know, take advantage of that. But what do you think? Sooner rather than later? Later?
I mean, it's only a matter of time.
Yeah, but... yeah. I think he will for sure. I just don't know if I'm going to be able to be hip enough to enjoy that.
We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll definitely see. So I this stuck out to me. Chronos disease.
What was that?
Chronos disease? You wanted to bring that up.
Crohn's disease. Yeah. Are you familiar with Crohn's disease at all?
I've heard about it, but I'm not versed. Hit me.
Okay. So this is the good part of the story.
Yeah.
So in January 2020, right before the pandemic started, I wasn't able to go to the bathroom for like a good month.
Okay. Wow.
It got pretty bad. Yeah. And I was like, I think I have to go to the hospital. So then I went to the hospital, had to get emergency surgery. And basically what they had to do was take my intestine out of my body to let all the poop flow out, basically.
Yeah. Because
it was built up like that. And if they didn't do that, probably would have died. Crohn's disease, it's like a stomach issue, intestinal issue, where your intestines become inflamed, so nothing can pass through it.
Wow.
And so basically what happened was that happened in January. And then like a month or so later, the pandemic happened. I think I was in the hospital when like the pandemic like first started happening, like very late January.
Yeah.
And then so, yeah, crazy stuff, man. I have this wicked scar on my stomach now. And then the next couple months after that, I had to go back for another like pretty big surgery to like tie everything back up and cut out the bad pieces. So while all this was happening, I had a couple, like I had a good month off from work. And that's where it really started. Like I had time to research what is money and this Bitcoin stuff. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not gonna front here. It was a very hard time for me. Never had to have emergency surgery or anything like that. The recovery was wild, but I think I turned that into something very beautiful in a way, because I was really down on myself, like kind of depressed in a way. And then I just started like working out and like being more curious and stuff. And like now I'm going to be running a marathon in May, and I work out every single day. I do things, read nonstop. Like I just do everything like possible, positively wise, to make sure I don't ever go back in that situation. So
yeah,
now it's Crohn's disease is it. I have the scar to show it, but it's definitely in my mind, like the rest of my life.
Yeah. Now, is there a way that people can know if they have Crohn's disease, or is it just a random act of things, or is there signs for that?
Yeah, I think the umbrella, it's called like IBD. Okay. So that's like irritable bowel syndrome. And a lot more people are having these issues nowadays because what we put in our bodies, what they sell at the grocery store, a lot of it's kind of poison in a way. If you ever look at like the back of a package for like any product, there's like 50 ingredients, and like there's xanthan gum and 20 grams of sugar and all this other stuff, food dyes. And I think that's what's causing this umbrella like IBD issue. And Crohn's disease is just one of the results of that. So, if anyone's having any problems going to the bathroom at all, stomach issues, look at what you're eating. Look at what you're putting in your body. Definitely matters.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. This is a topic near and dear. My sister is going down this voyage of trying to clean her eating. For her whole life, pretty much. That's why we're here in America. She was diagnosed with lupus. And the best care was here in the States. We're from Puerto Rico, so the best care was here in the States. We came here, and she's been living with that. But recently, she's in this adventure where she doesn't think she even has lupus.
Yeah, that's a good point.
She thinks it's something else. She thinks it's definitely diet related, and she's not getting any help from the pharmaceutical, you know, from the hospitals, because that's a whole nother issue there. But what, you know, she's probably listening, you know, where you have any recommendations for diet? How are you eating? What's your diet like?
That's a good question. So I agree with that. I think that the United States at least has an issue with overprescribing, pharmaceutical drugs.
Yep.
And that's just how the system works. Like it's a multi-billion dollar industry and they control everything. And then that's where doctors are taught in school. Like, hey, someone has an issue, give them this pill.
Right.
And it's not necessarily the best thing to do. So for me too, I'm rethinking if I have Crohn's disease or not. Because what I learned recently is doctors in other countries don't even know what Crohn's disease is, because the United States has such a problem with like the food we eat. Other countries don't have that problem.
Interesting point.
So that's what I'm trying to figure it out myself right now. So I can't really say if I do officially have it or not. The doctors, they say I do.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, man, ever since I really started paying attention to what I put in my body, it's been, life has been amazing in the sense of being healthy. So what I do, and this is through trial and error too, everyone's different. Mm-hmm. If you really want to change how you approach food in your diet, then just start taking a food log every day. Like, what am I putting in my body? How do I feel today? And that's a really good way to start. And then where I'm at right now is basically a paleo diet.
Okay.
So when I was doing it without even realizing it, I didn't even know what paleo was.
Yeah.
And the whole idea behind paleo is don't eat anything that's processed. And so all just try to eat all non-processed foods and just try to eat things that our ancestors ate while they're hunter-gatherers. So if you think about it, what's that? Meat, like fish, red meat. And then there's like nuts. You find nuts in the ground. So I really like eating like almonds, peanut butter, all that stuff. And yes, and then veggies too.
Okay.
So any kind of veggies. Just think about it. Like if our ancestors were walking around the woods, what would they be eating? They're not going to eat Doritos.
Right.
And I'm sure their stomachs were probably a lot better too.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that, man. Yeah. I've been trying to, I have my own history with weight. I was always the heavy kid or whatever. 2017 dropped about 300 pounds, you know, done the up and down thing over and over again. But yeah, I think my comfort spot does lie in not eating anything that's extremely sugar. I know that's a no brainer. But yeah. Just like you just being aware, I don't log, but I am aware. And I also intermittent fast, which
I do that too.
Awesome, man. Yeah, I do 10 to 6, the, you know, 10, and, you know, oh, 10 to 6, which is a 18-hour fast, 16-hour fast. What the hell?
Yeah, it'd be 8 hours. So yeah,
8-hour window. Yep. 16-hour fast. I've been doing it for about a year and a half now. And I find that also not only makes me feel good, especially if I work out right before my window opens, I have like these, like this super intense energy that I would never have with food. And also in the mindset, right? Like I've struggled with food for my whole life. Whenever I get anxious, I'm a binge eater. And
Me too.
I'm not binge eating, you know, lettuce. Yeah. I'm binge eating donuts and stuff like that. So what intermittent fasting did to me is 6 o'clock, which is why I like to schedule these podcasts at 6 o'clock. Six o'clock, boom. It's an easy decision. You're not in window. There's no reason to think about it. There's no temptation here. And it's really helped me out. For sure.
Yeah. So I try to do things that are sustainable. And like what works for me is I just don't eat till noon every day. So I wake up.
Okay.
Yeah. I'd wake up, do my work in the morning. And then right around noon, I'd eat like an omelet or something.
Yeah.
And then I don't really like have a cutoff time. It's just like whenever I'm full.
Yeah.
And really what I realized over this past year too is when you cut out those carbs, like donuts or whatever, you don't get the food cravings and you don't binge eat.
Right.
So when you switch to more of a lifestyle of like paleo, what's like naturally what we should be eating, it becomes a lot easier to eat healthy.
Yeah.
You don't get those cravings like I used to have.
Yeah.
So
I think if I'm not mistaken, that has to do with the insulin spike. So
yeah,
when you get those cravings is when you spike up in insulin and then you start to crash down or whatever.
Yeah.
And you're right. You won't have these massive peaks in insulin if you were just to not eat the sugar to spike it in the first place and crash it in the first place.
Yeah.
I go back right now. I'm on one of my good streaks. I'm locked in. I got a goal. I'm going to go vacation this summer. So got to look really chiseled and all that.
Yeah.
But just trying to be aware of it because, you know, I'm getting older. And, you know, I haven't had a grave situation to what you've had, but to me, it's like, after I have these binges, especially if they're like an anxiety driven one or anything like that, to me is that feeling of like, hey man, your body was able to handle this in your 20s and all that stuff, but you're going to fall apart eventually. And it's going to get to a point where, you know, you're not going to be able to handle it, whether it's your pancreas, whether it's whatever it may be. So it's one of those things where I most likely win that battle, but sometimes slip into the battle. It's a constant one for me.
Yeah. And at least you made it this far, to be honest. I was 23 when it happened. So like I only made it 23 years before it caught up to me.
Right. Right. And that's that thing is that we never know when these things are going to pop up.
Yeah. So, start now.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm working on it, man. So your physical activity. Yeah. How do you work out? How are you working out? I know you're running, you know, you post some of that stuff.
So my whole life I've been into like lifting just in the gym, you know?
Yep.
But I've been ignoring, more of stretching yoga type working out. And I've been ignoring, running. I was never a runner. I hated running.
Yeah.
So what I did is you're a fan of Joe Rogan, right?
Yes, sir.
You know how he does that Sober October thing?
Yep, I do.
Yeah. So me and my buddies, we did it last year and we did it this year too. We made it like a fitness challenge as well. And so if you look on my Instagram, I did a post every single day. I made sure I ran every single day. And so it started small, like I was running a couple miles per day and then I was building up. And at on Halloween, last day of October, I ended up running a half marathon, so a little over 13 miles, and a pretty good time too. It was like 8.5 minutes or so. And for me, like, I never did that in my life. I always hated running. And then I guess through that process, I learned to love it. And now I'm like kind of addicted to it, to be honest.
Yeah.
So that parlayed into now in May running this next marathon, or running my first marathon. And then after that, I'm sure I'll be gone to the next thing. So
yeah. So how's the training for the marathon going?
It's fun. Yeah. I plan on doing, I think I'm going to go for 15 miles probably tomorrow if the weather's nice.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just once a week I try to do a really long distance run. And then me and my girlfriend go on a bunch of walks every day. And yeah, just keep myself moving.
Yeah, that's awesome. In 2018, similar to you, October, same, it kind of seemed like we're doing the same thing.
Yeah, but I think a lot of people have like this track this past year. Like the pandemic really influenced a lot of things.
I agree with that 1,000%. Around October, there's this thing here in Worcester, which is the city I live in. It was like the Worcester Running Festival is what it was. So for some weird reason, man, I think I just wanted a challenge. I think I was just tired of, being stagnant. And last week of July and August, I was like, the hell with this. I've never ran before. I'm going to run a half marathon.
Yeah.
I trained every day. I also on my Instagram and stuff, in my previous videos, I've ran. But I never had a trainer and I didn't have the time to do it properly. So I would like explode my legs. Like I'm talking about test 10 miles one day, the day after that, try to test 10 again, instead of trying to drop it back. I didn't really know what the signs were to do it correctly or not. I wasn't eating properly. It was terrible. Long story short is I did do it. And the one thing I got from running that could take on forever is the mental strength, the mental fortitude of it. Because I tell you what, 13 and a half miles, I was done 7. The rest of it was pure gas, just pure keeping myself into it, keep staying locked in. I had music blasting. I even tried to, I remember this, I was running and I didn't want to stop, but I had Haribo gummy bears in my pocket. And I even tried to like fast carb. I was like, look, I'm gonna throw this carb in here and hopefully I could get a booster.
Yeah.
Somehow, some way I finished. I think I messed up my knee for life, but the respect I have for runners is the mental fortitude it takes.
It's the mental. It's 100% the mental. For sure. And that's why I'm doing it. Like the fitness part's cool and everything. I like being like on the thinner side and all that, but I'm just strengthening my mind, I guess you can put it.
For sure.
So that's just one aspect of the way it's try to strengthen my mind more every day.
Yeah. Do you listen to books? Do you listen to music? Nothing?
Yeah. I'm a huge podcast guy. So most of the time, I'd say 90% of the time when I have headphones in my ear, it's a podcast. When I'm running, it's a podcast. When I'm driving, it's a podcast. I love just taking in information. So I think I told you, my run I went on last week, I did like 13 miles and I just played one of your recent podcasts and I played one of your Talking in Bits podcasts too, back to back.
Nice, 'cause
it puts you in a whole different realm and I really enjoyed it too. So
super cool, man. Yeah. I'm the music type. Sometimes when I'm like, I gotta give up, being a little bitch, that right beat will come on, right? Or that right bass.
What's your go-to music for working out?
I have a mix. It's really hip-hop based, but I have an embarrassingly high amount of R&B in there.
Okay, cool. I'm not a huge R&B guy, but I really like hip-hop, rap, and I really like, I don't even know how to describe it, like house music.
Okay.
Yeah, loud beats.
Up-tempo stuff. Yeah. I listen to a lot of Griselda stuff, right? Like Benny the Butcher, stuff like that. I'm really into that stuff. And some of my old stuff, Jay-Z stuff, things like that.
Yep.
But the R&B has surprisingly has been one of those things that just keeps coming back. But I'm not even running anymore. I don't run very often. My treadmill broke that I had down here. But what I have been into is kettlebell workouts.
Okay.
And I started that last July. One of those Joe Rogan episodes where he had Peter, I can't say his last name, Russian guy who kind of mastered the kettlebell or brought it to the
stage. Okay, yeah, I think I briefly listened to that one.
Yeah, so that got me interested, and it just seemed like a no-brainer to me. It's like, look, I was really struggling getting in the gym for 60 minutes and being able to do a full workout. And then in that interview, he was like, well, with this kettlebell, you can pretty much smash the body and half the time, with a lot more natural day-to-day movement and less bodybuilder movement, if that makes sense. So That's going really good. I don't think I'm going back. I say that because I change my mind all the time. But,
Me too.
Yeah, but I now don't see the point of, and this is not COVID scare at all. I just don't see the point of spending an hour, 60, 90 minutes in the gym when I'm not trying to bodybuild. I know some people are trying to bodybuild and they want that nice body. I am not doing that. So kettlebells have literally saved my fitness game because now I can stay home.
That's a good point. And just to add into our conversation from earlier about cutting your expenses, I was spending like $80 a month in my local gym.
Good point.
And this whole past year, I've really built my own at-home gym. And it's nothing fancy. My house is pretty small. It's just resistance bands, a couple of dumbbells, just a few other small things, yoga mat. That's all you need. Just do some push-ups, do some sit-ups.
The kettlebells have spoiled me so much that I have dumbbells and bands. And last week I tried to switch it up. So I was like, I'm going to go back to the traditional bands and do like shoulders, And it's just so boring. It's just, I can't sit there now. Yeah. I don't know how I did it before, but I have a program from Jim Stepani. I don't know who Jim Stepani is, but
he's a lifter, right?
I think he's a bodybuilder, naturally.
Bodybuilder, yeah.
That's for a life, yeah. He has a supplement line that I'm really fond of. Highly recommended stuff. I have his app, and he has these, these days where he goes high rep range, like 20, 25 to 30 rep range or whatever. Yep. I just can't, man. Something about sitting there and counting to 30, and then switching and counting to 30, it's like, nah, let me get this kettlebell out and fuck some shit up,
I like that. And I saw something recently. A Bitcoiner tweeted this out. He was like, I don't ever count my reps at the gym, anything.
That's a
good way. If you could put that mental switch on where you're like, I'm not here just to get through the workout. I'm here to like crush it and really put my body to the work. And then like, once you get that unlocked, man, you're unstoppable.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm like. I'm basically there now.
That's a really solid point. I didn't think about it that way. I think the only argument just to have one, which is not necessary, would be how would you know what weight to go at if you're not counting your reps, right? Like, when do you know when to shift your weight up or shift your weight down?
You listen to your body.
Good point. Yeah. And
I mean, it depends on if you want to get super professional about it. Yeah. Hire a trainer or something, like have them show you. But like, I'm just trying to be a healthy guy. Like, I don't need to.
And I do see like the benefit in just going until you burn. Right, like
one of the biggest things I learned this past year, just listen to your body.
Yeah,
your body tells you something up if something's wrong. So
yeah, that's awesome. Now for the listeners, this whole conversation, I've seen you overcome mental hurdle after mental hurdle after mental hurdle. What would you recommend or any advice to the people that keep tripping themselves up, right, that shy away from everything or just scared to continue to push forward?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Just start learning more about yourself. What makes you happy? What makes you sad? And lean towards those things that make you happy. Because the more time you spend on doing those happy things, I think the easier life gets and it builds upon itself. So start really small. And then after that, add something else into there and add something else and then snowballs. And then just like my journey, I was basically at ground zero. I had two major surgeries. I couldn't walk. So you know what I did? Me and my girlfriend started walking a couple hundred feet per day. And then I started walking a mile per day. And then I started jogging a mile. And then I started that October Fitness Challenge, a couple miles. And then, it just snowballs. And now I'm up to 13 or so miles. It takes time. You have to be patient and just start at level one and build up from that.
Yeah. I love that advice, man. That's awesome. Keep chopping wood, I guess.
You just got to keep chopping wood.
Yeah. Yeah. And don't get derailed. So I know you told us a little bit about where Crypto Hoodie's heading, but what's the goal for this
Hoodie year? Crypto.
Hoodie Crypto. I'm sorry.
It's all good, man.
What's the goal for this year by the end of the year? Do you have any? Certain amount of people on board?
That's a good question. Yeah. I think my main goal is just get the education out.
Okay.
And so however that's accomplished, I'm not sure yet. I'm just kind of throwing things at the wall and seeing what sticks. And at the end of the year, it could be completely different. I don't know. We could be having this next conversation in a year and be like, all this stuff didn't work out, but it worked out. something completely like irrelevant I didn't even consider at the time. So it's really hard for me, but I guess right now all I'm trying to do is just get people to take the education in, learn about Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies and all that stuff, be curious, and just start buying some and holding on to it. Like, this is your savings account, the modern day savings account that works.
Yeah.
Like, just get out of the system we're in with the banks. They're not your friend.
Yeah.
So that's my goal. Just get the education out.
Yeah. And I'm a huge proponent that this is life changing in so many different arenas, this information. So please give them the URL one more time, because I want them to have this information.
Sure. Yeah. It's hoodiecrypto.com, HOODIECRYPTO.com. And I will also be launching a more formal version of the education. It's called bitcoinedu.com. That's BITCOINEDU.com. Right. So you can find basically all the links there, my newsletter. You can find a bunch of different stuff. So all good resources you can use.
And where, I mean, I'll add them to the show notes, but where could they follow you on social media to get this information as it drops?
Sure. A lot of my personal pages are at, my nickname's EPOD. So at EPOD Rules, that's EPODRULZ. And just, I'm on Twitter, Instagram, all the major, you know, social media sites. So shoot me a message and I would love to talk, and any way I could help, I would love to help you.
Cool. Eric, this was phenomenal, man. It's such a pleasure to finally, you know, see you and get to know you better. I'm sure this isn't going to be the last time you and I talk. Super excited you did this. Super excited for what you got going on, because like I said earlier, Bitcoin and education are two of my favorite things right now. And it's changing my life, and I'm sure it can change so many other people's life. Thank you so much, man. I appreciate you.
Thank you so much, man. I'm looking forward to talking again soon.
All right, brother. Talk soon.
All right, bud. See ya.
Hey everyone, thanks for joining me for another great conversation. That was incredible, to say the least. Me and Eric had so many things in common, but the part that struck me most among many other parts was, you know, the fact that things can happen in the blink of an eye. Things can change, your health can change, life can change. So it's important to be educated, it's important to be humbled, and it's important to keep pushing forward regardless. And I appreciate Eric for that. As always, guys, please rate, share, and subscribe so I can continue to have the conversations I love to have, and you can continue to get the conversations that you love to listen to. As always, guys, take care. Later.